I remember being really interested in your background when you were talking to me at the Plug-in Alliance party about coming from Detroit and kind of having a choice between the automobile industry, which provided a lot of stability, and the music industry, which can be quite the opposite. So I'd love you to tell me a little bit about your beginnings to set a stage for the contrast in terms of how far you've come today.
Wow. Okay. Well, that contrast was really between my mom and dad. Both were from Augusta, Georgia. And my mom, she grew up where her mom passed away in her arms at 9. And she was out on a farm and there was no one around, so she had to wait until someone came. But from that point, she raised her little brothers and sisters. So that mindset continued on to where when my sister and I, my little brother came along, she wanted to make sure that we could take care of ourselves, but had something stable. My dad grew up as a kid with James Brown, all the way from maybe 5 to 17, 18 years old. And right when they started to think about performing, and they would perform on the street, my dad met my mom, and eventually she got pregnant, and he went to the service to take care of her family, and James went on to become James Brown. So the contrast was one person, you know, thinking about music and daring to try, you know, to do something that was outside of the norm, the 9-to-5, and then my mom, who thought about stability in a normal 9-to-5 job.
How did your dad feel about missing out on that James Brown opportunity?
I'm sure to the day he passed away, there was always the what ifs. So that was one of the motivating things for me to make sure that I didn't live that type of life of what ifs. At that time, Motown was taking over the world. It was the 60s. And I came along early 60s. And it was almost like the training camp of life, because when you wake up, you would hear music. Sometimes it would be live. It would be people, you know, you might see on some of the movies nowadays where they show, or in plays where people sing under the streetlights, where that was real in Detroit. People would literally perform under the streetlights, hoping that Berry Gordy or Smokey Robinson, somewhere from Motown, would see them and they could get signed at Motown. But most people thought that Motown was a record label, and it was actually the neighborhood. The sisters or the moms would help the females at Motown with their dresses or the hair or how to carry themselves. The men or the brothers would be bodyguards or chauffeurs or sell the suits. And if you weren't in the music business in Motown, you were in the automobile industry and you were playing Motown music, so there was no getting away from it. But the tenement area is really small. So in that area, we had Gladys Knight or Smokey Robinson, The Temptations, Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, Aretha. You know, everywhere you looked, there was stars to us. The cool thing was it made us feel like there was no disconnect in making it. Even though there was a lot of racial things going on at the time, we could go in our apartments or in our homes and see the same people that we see on the street giving us lunch or candy with the Beatles or the Rolling Stones or, you know, Ed Sullivan. So it made us feel like we could do anything.
That's pretty inspiring. So at what point did you transition to LA?
87 was when I came out for Anita Baker, and then I came out again in maybe 89, 90 for Whitney Houston. And that's when I really decided to come out and stay.
Now, were you a musician, or were you always into engineering, producing, mixing?
I knew my calling from the beginning. I mean, literally, just looking at you right now, I can remember looking through the bars of my crib and watching a record spin on a turntable. I actually left school in Detroit at 14 and went on the road. It was a group named Parliament Funkadelic, George Clinton. And I had the chance to go into the studio and watch them work, and that was the thing that relit the flame.